Hi, everybody. This is Mark Movsesian. I'm the co-director of the Center for Law and Religion at St. John's. And I'm joined once again by my friend and colleague, Mark DiGirolami, the center's other co-director, for an episode of Legal Spirits, our podcast series on cases and issues in law and religion. You can find past episodes archived on iTunes and also at our website, Law and Religion Forum. That's one word, lawandreligionforum.org. Well, today, Mark, we're going to talk about the Supreme Court's argument this week in the Fulton case, which is a case that drew a lot of attention early on. People thought maybe this is going to be a blockbuster case in which the court reconsiders its ruling 30 years ago in Employment Division versus Smith on the constitutionality of religious exemptions. The court heard argument this week, and it was a bit of a perplexing argument, actually. Not in terms of ultimate result, but in terms of how the court is going to decide this case, what reasoning the court's going to use. So what we'd like to do today is just give a quick overview of the case and then go through some of the major themes that appeared in this week's oral argument, which, by the way, Mark, was 2 hours long. It was a long oral argument.
Yes, that's right. And there were a number of different people that spoke, representing different interests. So why don't I just give a quick background on the case? We've talked about this case actually before, so listeners who are interested can listen to some of our previous podcasts, and there's plenty of commentary about it. But just in brief, the case involves the issue of foster care placement, and the parties are CSS, Catholic Social Services in Philadelphia, and the City of Philadelphia. And the issue is that by agreement of the city has a number of agreements with private foster care agencies, one of which is CSS, which assist the city in or which handle foster care placement on behalf of the city for all of the children of the city that require foster care. And so CSS is one of, I think, more than 100 organizations that does this, but CSS has a religious objection to placing foster children with gay couples and unmarried couples.
Correct. I think that's the key is they don't want to place children with unmarried couples.
That's right.
And also they don't recognize gay marriage as a marriage because of their Catholic beliefs.
Correct. Right. So those are the issues, and as a result, the city said that it no longer wants to contract with CSS to provide these services, which essentially means shutting down CSS with respect to its foster care services, because it will not comply with the city's demand that it violate its religious beliefs in this respect.
Right. And so the question here is, in this case, is CSS is requesting what's called a religious accommodation or a religious exemption. They say that because the city of Philadelphia's new rules about contracts with regard to foster care services would require them to forego their exercise of religion, that they should be exempted. And indeed, they argue that the free exercise clause of the Constitution would give them such an exemption. That's the question here
right.
Before the court.
Right. And the city is claiming that it's simply enforcing a non-discrimination provision, which is part of the general law. It's not like it made some kind of new, doesn't have the power to do that, make a new law. It's simply enforcing that law against CSS, just like it would enforce it, it claims, against any other foster care provider.
Right. Now, the leading case with regard to accommodations under the Free Exercise Clause is a case called Employment Division versus Smith from 1990. And Employment Division versus Smith it's a complicated case. It hasn't solved nearly as many questions as the court thought it would. But the basic kind of, thumbnail sketch of the Smith case is that if a law is neutral and generally applicable, that is, it doesn't target religion for disfavored treatment, then there is, generally speaking, no right to a constitutional accommodation. So in this case, the city of Philadelphia is saying, well, and we have a neutral policy here, and it's generally applicable. It says no discrimination. And therefore, under Smith, CSS, the Catholic agency, should not get an accommodation. And when the court granted cert in the case, one of the questions on which it granted cert was whether Smith should be reconsidered. And there have been indications on the court, not only in this case, but in some other cases, that a few of the justices seemed ready to reconsider Smith because they think Smith doesn't give enough protection to religious exercise. But I have to say, Mark, in listening to the argument in the case this week, it doesn't seem like there's all that much interest in overruling Smith, at least in this case.
I think that's true. And while you have maybe a justice here or there, maybe Justice Alito, who expressed even in argument some frustration with Smith in light of, well, frankly, in light of the exceptions to Smith that are so glaring in this case, the sort of carve-outs that we'll talk about in a moment, you might, the argument is, well, if it's that, if there are so many exceptions and if there are that many carve-outs, maybe it's time to reconsider Smith. There were some suggestions about that from Justice Alito, maybe from one or two of the other justices, but ultimately it seems very unlikely that even the justices who are perhaps not fully supportive of Smith are going to use this case to overrule it.
Right. And in fact, two important facts here to note are, one, the agency is not really asking to overrule Smith. The agency says they'd win in this case even under Smith. And that led the newest justice, Amy Barrett, to ask this question, well, if you win under Smith, then should we even entertain overruling that case? So I don't think that really there's a lot of stomach for that right now.
Now, I will say this. Any good lawyer is going to say that they rule under existing law and that they are going to try to overrule precedent. It would be a very silly lawyer that would come in and say, no, we lose under the existing long established law, but please go ahead and overrule that law, especially with this court that's disinclined to do that kind of thing, right? There's a sort of small bore precedent oriented kind of court. So it's a little strange to say, well, that means that they're not asking that Smith really be overruled. I mean, I think they are asking that, but they're also trying to hedge their bets.
Okay, that's a fair point, Mark. And there, as we'll see, there was a lot of fancy lawyering in this case on both sides, I think. But I think so you and I agree, Mark, at least based on oral argument, it doesn't seem like the court is really interested in overruling Smith in this case. Let's talk now about some of the themes that came up in oral argument. And as I have to say, when I read through this argument the first time, I was left more puzzled than at the beginning about exactly what was going on in this case. And that might have been a strategy on the part of the city of Philadelphia. I have to say their lawyer, Neil Katyal, was very good about raising a lot of complications in this case that would make the court a little uneasy about a broad ruling. I'm not sure that's going to succeed, but I thought it was just an interesting way to argue the case. One of them has to do with this issue, which seems pretty new. In fact, Justice Alito even referred to it as a new issue, and that is the distinction between a contractor and a licensee. A number of the justices spent time on this, and the question is, well, is the city of Philadelphia acting here as a regulatory sovereign, or is it acting simply as a kind of manager of its own functions and a market participant in a way, making contracts? And Neil Katyal, arguing for the city, said, look, the city can insist on terms in its contracts. It can impose conditions on contractors like these agencies that perform functions for the city. So this was an attempt, I think, to say, look, this really isn't a serious constitutional question at all. Mark, what do you think the justices made of that?
Well, I agree that there was a lot of questioning directed at both sides with respect to this question, a brand new question, a question that had apparently had not been raised below, an issue that had not been raised below, and that the attorneys for the city came up with just for the Supreme Court, especially for the Supreme Court. You know, it is true that if the city is acting as manager, if it is engaged in, for example, making contracts with its own employees, think about, for example, teachers, public school teachers, or people who work, you know, police officers and so on, that it has more leeway with respect to the sorts of conditions on employment that it can impose when it makes those deals. Now, having said that, it can't just deprive people of their constitutional rights. You can't make employment with the city dependent on, you know, giving up all of your rights. So there's a little bit more discretion and leeway that the government gets in those contexts. But what was strange to me about those contexts is about that argument is that, number one, that argument has never been made before with respect to religious freedom. There was a question asked by Justice Sotomayor of Neil Katyal about this issue and, you know, how does Smith deal with a contracting issue? And Katyal strangely says that Smith gives the government more latitude in the contracting context. I've got no memory of Smith ever dealing with that question. And number two, most of the cases that I know about that involve this issue are in the speech context. And as I say, they involve employees of the city. And there's no argument here that CSS is an employee of the city. So I think that the argument is, yes, there were a lot of questions about it, but I'm not sure how far it's going to go.
Yeah, I agree. I think that I'd be very surprised if this is a showstopper in the case, that this kind of changes everything for the reasons you say. Also because, you know, there's another doctrine out there, the doctrine of unconstitutional conditions, you know, in which the court has said that the government cannot condition benefits on a beneficiary's foregoing a constitutional right. Now, of course, okay, this isn't a beneficiary. This is an independent contractor, but I think it's the same principle. And this issue of unconstitutional conditions came up only at the very end of the argument. There was just an oblique reference to Rust versus Sullivan, which is a case involving this. But I have to think that if they do go down this path, the court, I'd be very surprised if the court said that, you know, the government can make you give up your fundamental constitutional rights if you make a contract. Now, I will say the doctrine is indeterminate on constitutional conditions, and there are cases that point in different directions. The government doesn't have to subsidize the exercise of a constitutional right. That's one of the principles. But I just think I just don't think this is really going to fly, this argument. And if it does, I think they're going to have to handle the unconstitutional conditions question.
Well, there's another strange point that I'd add, and maybe we'll talk about this a little bit more later on, because it does touch on broader issues. But it would be a strange doctrine indeed that every time the government takes over a new function and starts to contract about it, the scope of free exercise or free speech rights just automatically shrinks. Because that would mean that in order for the government essentially to do what it wants, it just has to occupy the field on any particular issue. Now, it is true that the government has been occupying more and more fields as time has gone on. And maybe that's just an inevitable byproduct of the nature of governments, local and federal, in 21st century America. But if that's the case, the Supreme Court really is going to have to deal with the question whether the Free Exercise Clause has anything to say about that.
Right. And we should point out here for our listeners that both Mark and I have written about this issue in different articles about how the growth of the administrative state is putting a lot more pressure on the exercise of religion. And this really would be a good example of that. And this came up in argument. I mean, Justice Barrett asked this question at one point. Well, could the city just take over running all the hospitals and then say that, you know, we're going to contract it out and everybody has to agree with our terms? I just don't see the court going down that path. Okay, now another issue here was this issue. A couple of the justices brought up the issue that this was really an unnecessary conflict. This was a manufactured fight, and that there is a win-win situation here, a win-win solution here. Justice Kavanaugh said that. What do I mean by this? Well, Justice Alito pointed out that no same-sex couple has ever been denied service by CSS, the Catholic agency in this case. Justice Breyer said the same thing at one point. And Justice Kavanaugh said, you know, isn't this a case really where Philadelphia has created a clash when it could have tried to balance things as the Obergefell case and the Masterpiece Cake Shop promised, he said, promised there would be some kind of a balance here. At one point, Justice Alito said, look, if we're being honest, this is not about ensuring that gay couples can be foster parents. This is because the city can't stand CSS's old-fashioned view about marriage. And so there seemed to be some interest, at least on the part of a couple of the more conservative justices, to decide this case in a way that sort of slaps down Philadelphia for creating a conflict where it didn't have to. Mark, what do you think about that?
Yeah, no, I saw that line of argument too. In fact, Justice Kavanaugh called Katyal and the city's position absolutist and extreme. Those are pretty strong words. And you're right that this argument was made by other justices, including Justice Breyer, right? So a justice who isn't regarded as one of the conservatives on the court. I wonder about this. You know, it doesn't seem to me that it would take much to set up a new fight where a gay couple does go to CSS and ask for placement. So yes, it's true. It just so happens. In fact, it's a little strange that that we're in the posture that we're in. Couldn't they get one gay couple to go and ask CSS for services? But they didn't. It's true. And so maybe this is premature in that respect. Having said that, it doesn't seem like it would take much to make the controversy live.
Right. Now, one of the lawyers, and it actually may have been Justice Sotomayor too, said, well, the reason there's no gay couple that has tried is because they know they're going to be rejected. So why bother? But, you know, I think, Mark, this also goes to this issue, I guess we'll get to it under Smith, of neutrality. You know, and Smith says that if the government has targeted religion for disfavored treatment, then there may be a right to a religious accommodation. Or actually, in Masterpiece Cake Shop suggests that there is a right to a religious accommodation. And so perhaps what Justices Alito and Kavanaugh are getting at here is, and even Justice Breyer, is that, well, this looks like the city was targeting CSS, that they were actually provoking a fight here where they really didn't have to.
It could be. It could be that might be. I hadn't thought about that angle, actually. I had thought that this discussion about whether they were provoking was essentially they were picking a fight where there wasn't a fight. And so it's almost like, you know, where's the harm, so to speak, in permitting this to happen? But maybe they're setting up that kind of claim that even without any concrete tangible harm and without any couple having been turned away by CSS, now the city just, and as you say, as Alito said, we just don't like your position on this. Now, you know, Katyal demurred on that question. She said, absolutely not. That's not what we're doing here, and so on. In fact, we tried to create a compromise. We said, you know, we're not telling you that you have to affirm gay marriage, right? We're not telling you that you have to come out with any statement. You just have to consider these people on equal terms. And actually, interestingly enough, Justice Breyer asked essentially about the same kind of thing, about the status conduct distinction, right? Asked CSS, asked Lori Wyndham, couldn't you just not offer any opinion about same-sex marriage, but simply certify the couple as qualified and set that other issue to the side? And I thought that was a little ironic for Breyer to ask that question, right? He thinks status and conduct might resolve the issue here when it comes to CSS's beliefs. But of course, he doesn't think that such a distinction holds up to scrutiny when it comes to the rights of LGBT people. So there's a little bit of I wouldn't want to say a double standard, but these arguments, it seems that they sort of come and go when they're convenient to come and go.
Well, of course, Justice Breyer is the quintessential pragmatist, and there is no substitute for the reasoning, for legal judgment. I forget exactly what he said in one of the Establishment Clause cases. Okay, so we've talked about the idea of neutrality under Smith. Another thing, another theme in the Smith case is that if the government isn't acting in a general way, if the law is not generally applicable, then also there might be a right to a religious accommodation. And so the court also spent some time on this. And here the question is whether there aren't other exceptions to the non-discrimination policy in the City of Philadelphia's program. And if there are, of course, that would indicate that this is not a general requirement, and therefore maybe there's a right to a religious accommodation under Smith. And here, Mark, this is another point where I was puzzled, because all of a sudden it just seemed a lot more complicated than it seemed before going into oral argument. Again, I want to give credit to Neil Katyal for this. He, at some point, the justices, I mean, Justice Alito, too, was saying, and Justice Gorsuch was saying, look, we're just sort of not clear what's going on in this case. So, Mark, you want to talk about that?
Yeah. So one issue here involves exactly what is it that is the right comparator, right? So how, when we evaluate the issue of general applicability, what exactly are we evaluating? Okay. So one issue with respect to that question is, apparently that there are different moments of making exceptions. So it seems to me there's no question I suppose maybe the city thinks that there is, but I think most of the justices think that there's no question that the city is making some exceptions to its non-discrimination rule or to the fair practice ordinance, right? It's granting some individualized accommodations. But one issue is, when are they doing it? Are they doing it at the stage of screening of particular families, or are they doing it at the stage of placing particular children with particular families? And the city says, well, any exemptions that were granted were at that second stage, not at the first stage, where CSS is making a discrimination, right? It's saying it doesn't want to even consider families at that first stage. Therefore, it says we're talking about sort of apples to oranges here, right? There's no comparable granting of exemptions at the right stage.
Correct.
So I think that that's going to be a loser of an argument, right? The question isn't, okay, subdividing the entire process into its various stages, are there comparable exemptions that you're giving at the various stages? The question is, are you granting exemptions for what look like secular reasons where you're not granting them for religious reasons? I think the justices get past that point. The second issue, or the second possible place of comparison, is at the placement stage. And here, CSS says, well, look, the state actually does, the city actually does grant exemptions from the Fair Practice Ordinance, Fair Practices Ordinance, which is this non-discrimination provision, with respect to placement. It considers disability, for example. It considers race. And if it allows exemptions or accommodations with respect to discrimination on those bases, that is to say, it tries to place children with respect, it allows discrimination with respect to family status. And so if it allows all of those things, but it doesn't allow our exemption, then it is granting only secular exceptions and not granting religious exceptions. And I think there was some fight on the court about exactly whether it's doing that, whether that's the right way to characterize it. Certainly the city disagrees. But for my money, I think if this case is going to be decided in a way that carves into Smith a little bit, or at least clarifies some of Smith's very important individualized exception to its general neutral and generally applicable rule, this is where it's going to go.
Yeah. Okay, so these last couple of issues we've talked about, neutrality and general applicability, under Smith, they go to this idea that religion has been targeted for disfavored treatment. And if there is targeting of religion for disfavored treatment, then under Smith, most people think the rule is that you have to move to a strict scrutiny analysis, a compelling interest analysis. And this was another issue that came up in the case, and that is, well, what would the city's compelling interest here be? They claim an interest in preventing discrimination, but there were a number of questions. I think like six of the justices asked about this. Well, so is ending discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation, is it as compelling as ending discrimination on the basis of race? Because what if an adoption agency had said, we're just not going to place kids with interracial couples? There's hardly any chance that the court would say, well, that's all right. That, you know, this, because the state has said there, the court has said there's a compelling interest in ending racial discrimination. Would it be the same here? And there were a number of questions about this. Mark, what did you pick up from that?
Yeah, I agree. Justice Kagan, Justice Barrett. There were other people that asked about this. They said, is ending discrimination on the basis of race super compelling? There was a sort of an analogy. This is what Justice Kagan asked, mm-hmm. an analogy to super precedent, right? You've got precedent, you've got super precedent, right?
Right.
This is a super compelling justification as opposed to just a regularly compelling justification. I do think that perhaps there are some justices that might be open to an argument that discrimination on the basis of race is categorically different in light of the history of the country with slavery and discrimination on the basis of race, categorically different from anything else. But I don't know that the court needs to get into that question here.
I agree.
Because here, notice that if CSS is correct, the city is allowing exemptions from the non-discrimination rule by specifically focusing on or targeting certain efforts toward placing children, at least with an eye toward race or disability. So in some ways, it doesn't follow that. Certainly, one wouldn't say that discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation is more compelling, that there's a more compelling interest in the city enforcing that justification than discrimination on the basis of race.
Yes, and there's another issue that comes, another thing that came up, which might allow the court to avoid getting into this thicket, which is that, and a number of justices said this, both on the right and on the left, that really there's no indication that gay couples are being denied the chance to be foster parents in the city of Philadelphia because CSS simply would refer gay couples to other agencies. And so if the concern is, well, we want to make sure that there's no discrimination here, there really is a practical matter, some of the justices were saying, there really isn't, as a practical matter, a danger of discrimination because this group is going to be included. These couples who have a dignity interest and so on are going to be included. Now, I don't know what the court will make of that, but that would be another way to get around this question about is it as compelling as race?
Right. And look, I think one answer to that is, well, it doesn't matter that they can get their services elsewhere. The injury or the harm in anti-discrimination rules is the dignitary harm. Now, look, it is true that even here in this case, there has not actually been that dignitary harm, but perhaps the city is being preemptive, right? It wants to make sure that it's saying the right things, that it's affirming the correct messages so that gay couples don't think the city doesn't have our back. Something like that. That seems to be the only kind of harm that's at issue here that the city is proactively, let's say, trying to get ahead of.
Yes, and two justices did make that point. Justice Sotomayor made that very clearly, and even Justice Kavanaugh said that he understood he called it stigma, but he understood the dignitary harm that's involved here. All I'm saying is this is another possible avenue for the court to go, which is to say that there really hasn't been injury to that interest because. As far as we know, Catholic Social Services will very kindly refer these couples to other agencies, and it isn't necessarily that much of an injury. I understand that, of course, some people feel very differently about that. That leads to the last point we want to make here, which is this argument about third-party harm. And for those of us in the Legal Academy, we know this has drawn a lot of attention in the last couple of years, the idea that religious accommodations should not be allowed when they cause, I don't know, undue harm is one way of saying it, undue harm to third parties. And this was dealt with a little bit obliquely by Justice Sotomayor and Kavanaugh, but only Justice Barrett raised it directly, this issue of third party harm. And I guess amusingly for those of us in the Legal Academy, the lawyer simply dismissed it and said, this is not something that we're really focusing on, the lawyer for one of the groups defending the city's policy. So I guess it's just a lesson to all of us in the Academy that the things that we think are vital and controlling might not be thought of that way at the court.
Yeah, and I think there are a number of features of the so-called third-party harm argument. One feature of it is that there's an actual violation of the Establishment Clause that occurs when third-party harms are imposed on the basis of religious accommodations. That argument wasn't even touched by any of the justices. So the sort of constitutional valence of that argument was not avoided. But, you know, congratulations to the folks that are making this argument for getting at least one justice to ask a question about it. That's a triumph of sorts.
Okay, so we get now to the end of our podcast and prediction time. I mean, I guess, Mark, what I would say is I'm fairly confident based on the case going in and the questions that the agency is going to win this case, Catholic Social Services, but I can't say I'm especially confident about what they're going to say. That is, the court is going to say. I could imagine a very lopsided vote in favor of Catholic social services, 7-2, 8-1 even, but maybe having fractured opinions about exactly how you justify this. I could also imagine a ruling that gets 5 justices or 6 justices that says, we're going to clarify Smith. This isn't neutral. This isn't generally applicable. And we think the compelling interest test is not met. Or I could imagine a ruling that says, we think this isn't neutral. It's not generally applicable. And that's it. We don't go any further, because there are sometimes where the court has just stopped right there. What do you think, Mark?
Yeah, so I agree on a number of fronts. I agree that CSS will win. I agree that Smith will not be overruled, most likely. I agree that there will be a one dissenter, and that will be Justice Sotomayor. That's seems to me very likely in light of her previous votes and in light of her comments at oral argument. The remainder
are at least one dissenter. I don't think you mean, are you firmly committing to it's an 8-1?
Right? No. I'm sorry. That there will be, right. I don't mean that. I know yes. That there will be one dissenter.
Yes.
So at
right,
least one dissenter, right?
Right.
I could be wrong. Maybe Justice Sotomayor will surprise me, but these are always predictions, right? With respect to the remainder, I think the likeliest, if I were to guess the likeliest avenue of resolution, it would be on this general applicability prong. I think that the court has long left this particular feature of the Smith Employment Division versus Smith carve out unclear. And this is an opportunity to at least clarify just what the court means, possibly adopting something like what then Judge Alito's opinion looked like in the Newark Police Beard case from the Third Circuit. So this was a case that is well known, and where the issue of general applicability was really fleshed out in the question of whether granting secular exemptions without granting religious exemptions is permissible and under what circumstances it is. That would be my guess. If that is the direction that we go in, then I wonder, my biggest curiosity is what Justice Kagan will do. Because if you remember in Masterpiece Cake Shop, she and Justice Gorsuch were sort of fighting it out on the equal applicability issue with respect to, Christian bakers baking cakes for gay couples and the reverse, secular bakers baking cakes for people that wanted, cakes with sort of traditional marriage messages. And she said that there isn't that kind of unequal application of the law really doesn't apply or doesn't make a difference with respect to issues involved in Smith. Curious what happens here. In other words, there's enough uncertainty about the right point of comparison and about what exactly it is that needs to be compared, that it seems that there would be a lot of space for dissenting, for disagreements about what the nature of that analysis should look like.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll see, listeners. So we won't expect an opinion in this case until sometime in the spring, but when it comes down, we'll be back with an analysis of whatever the justices do. Meanwhile, for Legal Spirits, this has been Mark Movsesian and Mark DiGirolami of the Center for Law and Religion. Legal Spirits is our podcast series on cases and issues in law and religion, and we look forward to seeing you again next time.